The planet is restless, Captain. They want their podcast. And they shall have it. I'll beam down to the surface.
You have the bridge.
Captain, that is illogical. These are Trek fans. They will challenge and dissect your knowledge with great emotion. It is a mission fraught with danger, peril, and grave risk.
Suggestions?
Send in the Red Shirts.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're back again with another episode of the Red Shirts. As we post this, we just experienced another Thanksgiving holiday. As always, I choose the wrong times to start my diet, but hey, it was worth it. And I believe this is also the first podcast of the Red Shirts post-election. Is that correct? Do I have that right?
I think so.
Yeah, so we managed to, it seems appropriate, we managed to elect Khan as our new president. So
sadly, we don't have a Captain Kirk to take care of the situation.
Well, you know, hopefully in the next 4 years, we will have someone to lead him into the Mataara Nebula.
I hope so.
So let's just get on to business for this episode. Today, we're going to talk about the Next Generation. I believe it's my favorite iteration of Star Trek. And I say that, again, as I said last podcast, you know, Captain Kirk, he sits on a pedestal above and beyond. And, you know, if Star Trek were made today, the original series with today's special effects, it might be more of a dog race. But I'm going to say this is my favorite iteration. And I just want to briefly, I kind of touched on this last podcast. I became aware of Next Generation when a friend of mine that I was working with, he told me that I should check out Best of Both Worlds. And
You're way late.
Oh, yeah. Like I said, it took me years just to get on board with Star Trek, the original series. It took Wrath of Khan to get me to start watching that series. And that's what got me watching, liking the motion picture, even though I'd seen it prior and hated it. But after going through the whole series and then watching the movie again, fell in love with it. And then I started watching The Next Generation, but I was already kind of spoiled by the action of the original series, movies, and the TV show. So it was like resetting the clock. So I'm in my dorm room, and I'm watching the pilot of The Next Generation. And I watched next week, I watched the week after that, and I'm like, boy, this is kind of boring. Because I was used to Kirk, Spock, and Bones doing their thing in the movies at that point. So then my friend, and you know, after I graduated and started working, my friend told me, you don't like The Next Generation? Oh, you got to check out this one episode. And I'm like, what episode is it? And he's like, check out The Best of Both Worlds. And I watched it. I'm like, holy ish. This is really good. Then I went back to the beginning, and that first season, first couple seasons, they were challenging, but they were still watchable. They were still watchable. They were challenging. It was still Gene Roddenberry kind of hanging on to the 60s and the I don't want to say ideology, but just some of those, the tonality and some of the simplistic messages, you know. But then when it got into, I want to say the third season, when they changed, whatever season they changed the uniforms from those tight bodysuits into the more, what my friend calls the potato sack suits, that's when it started to pick up for me. But yeah, like I said, this is probably my favorite version of Star Trek. I am watching Voyager now, and man, that's really nipping at the heels of Next Generation. I'm starting to think Janeway might overtake Picard for me, but just some some brief information. You know, as we all know, the Next Generation cast featured the captain, Jean-Luc Picard, the only Frenchman who spoke with a British accent, as far as I'm aware. First Officer William T. Riker, who in one outlandish episode became cloned, and his clone exists in the Star Trek universe. Commander Data, who was at the time the only android in Star Trek other than his brother Lore. And I guess now, as of Nemesis, Data no longer exists. I can't remember what happened with Lore, but now there is a Data has a twin called B4, and that's Nemesis canon. We got Lieutenant Worf, the security chief who replaced Tasha Yar, who was killed in the Skin, or I forget the name of the episode.
Skin of Evil.
Skin of Evil, right. And, I mean, I really feel for, I can't remember the actress's name, but I really feel for her because if there was ever an example of the writers saying, let's just come up with something to kill this character off, that was the episode.
Yeah, but Denise Crosby came back, though.
Oh, she came back. She came back hard. Things. Yeah.
Oh, she came back.
As a matter of fact, the episode she came back in, I would count as some of my favorite of the series. Then you have Commander Geordi LaForge, the engineer, the guy who wears the beret around his face.
Really? But,
that's, yeah. And looking at that prop, it strikes me as they're at the 11th hour, and then we're like, oh, we forgot to take care of that, the visor for Geordi. Someone go down to the dollar store and get something.
Wow.
And Counselor Deanna Troi, now I'm probably going to catch hell for this, but for the majority of the series, she was the most annoying of all of the characters. The most irritating.
Oh, I disagree completely.
You,
Wesley
what?
Crusher, Wesley Crusher, far and away the most annoying character.
Okay, well, okay. Why do you see, Mark, you're launching into it already. I had my note cards all laid out. Now you're about to piss me off, okay? Why do you say, and you're not the only one to say that. Why is Wesley Crusher so annoying to Trek fans?
Because he is. You know, now I can't speak for all Trek fans, but I can only speak for me. When I was a kid, I would always hate the kid's sidekick. So that means Wendy and Marvin and Super Friends, hated them. Rick Jones and Avengers, hated him. Snapper Carr and JLA, hated him. Because it's pandering, they don't exist, they have no purpose. And with Crusher, so let me get this right. Let's make this kid acting ensign. So I'm on this ship, and some like 17-year-old is going to tell me what to do? Get out of here.
Well, wait, ensigns don't tell people what to do?
He doesn't get that respect, man. He got to go through the academy, earn it, and we all saw what happened when he went to the academy. He did stupid things. Then he gets in the, you know, Starfleet and can't cut it. The guy was just annoying. I hated him, and I hated his mama, too. Get rid of her, too.
Oh, my God. Well, you do realize that he evolved into...
I like Dr. Pulaski better.
What's that?
I like Dr. Pulaski better.
You like Dr. Pulaski better than Beverly Crusher?
Yes. Yes, I did. Crusher was too much of a know-it-all.
And Bones wasn't?
Bones never went on the bridge and told Kirk what to do. He stayed in his lane for his medical thing.
Dude, you're so wrong. Bones would hand Kirk his ass every now and then.
Yeah, when it needed to be handed to him. Crusher would just come in there, I'm Beverly, I can tell you what to do. What? And this whole fake underlying sexual tension between them, look, baby, you're going to give me some or you're not. Oh, but make up your mind. Couldn't stand her.
Craig, please, can you speak to this man?
Straighten him out, Craig.
No. You need straightening. You like Beverly, you like Pulaski over Crusher.
Crusher, yes. Both Crushers can go away.
Craig, what do you weigh in on that?
Well, so I have to confess that Next Generation is not really a series that I watched religiously.
Oh.
And it's got to do with timing and what was going on. I didn't get to watch Next Generation from the beginning, and I came and watched it midway through, and didn't watch it continually either. So I've watched a lot of episodes, not in sequence. And that's why it sort of wasn't really one that I wanted to watch. I didn't want to watch it. Maybe I was just annoyed that they couldn't bring back the original cast because they were all still alive. And of acting age.
They were doing
age.
Movies. They were doing movies at that time.
Sure, but I don't know. I don't know what it was, but I'm going to go back and watch it because of what you were saying, Mike, about how you got pulled into it again. So I'm going to give it another chance to start binge watching it again. But as I said, I watched a ton of episodes, not in sequence. So if there's story arcs, I obviously missed some of them. So I can't really say that I didn't like Will Wheaton's character. They wrote him as a kid who was clueless. So
Whoa! Maybe we're watching two different series, but I'm blanking on it. What's his name again?
Wesley Crusher.
Wesley, right. The Wesley Crusher I know, he was a genius.
And he never let you forget it either.
Sheldon Cooper. What I meant to say was he was a kid, and they had to write him as a kid. He was a genius, but he wasn't as mature as the adults. And I didn't expect him to be anyway. So for me, it was fine.
Hey. All right. Well, okay. Hey, that was a pleasant diversion. So anyway, let me just round out the cast here. Then you had Gates McFadden playing Dr. Beverly Crusher. And, you know, you had Dr. Crusher, and you had Deanna Troi, kind of like Ginger and Marianne. And like most people, I think, would agree, you would go Marianne over Ginger. Well, I would go Crusher over Troi. I would go Betty over Veronica. And again, proving that I would go Crusher over Troi. She just had it all. She was smart, straightforward, intelligent. She knew her stuff. And Deanna Troi, see, to me, Deanna Troi, you know, Big Sexy, you and I talk about, you know, participation trophies and the wimpification of society. Deanna Troi was the poster child for that. Every time, and I'm watching Voyager, and Deanna's character has a couple of guest spots with another annoying character, Reginald Barkley.
Now, Barkley can die.
He did one episode I liked where he was featured called The Nth Degree, I believe it was called.
Yeah, that was good. That was good.
But every time she appears, well, no, your feelings are validated. Well, no, you should be concerned. And even in Generations, when Picard is crying because his family got killed, obviously, yeah, you're going to grieve, but you have every right, Captain. Oh, get out of here. Oh, I'm so sick of that.
You are so wrong.
How am I wrong?
You are so wrong. First of all, and I'll use, you know, the comparison of Crusher and Troi. They both have full command status. Crusher got
not at the beginning. Not at the beginning.
Not at the beginning. Right. I'm going to get to that. You know, Crusher gets hers because she's the chief medical officer. Fine. Deanna had to earn hers. And she went through the training and earned her third pip. So she is a commander. And then when she took command, she handled business when they ran into that filament that time.
Right.
And the ship was disabled. She took the bridge and handled it. Then they doctored her physically, put her on that Romulan ship by herself. She handled business. McFadden. Crusher could never do that.
Crusher got her own ship in All Good Things.
Yeah, a medical ship.
She's a doctor. What's the matter with you? What kind of ship should she have? A galaxy class starship?
Hey, if you're a captain, you should be handling your business.
Listen,
you captain and doctor, you can't be both.
I'm ashamed to say this. I can't really speak to any specific episode where she put it down.
Because she didn't.
But she did.
Because
I'm not prepared to have this argument because I didn't think it would be necessary. She was beautiful, smart, intelligent. Now, I have heard that the actress herself, Gates McFadden, was very difficult to work with.
Yeah, that's why they got rid of her for the whole second season.
Yeah, maybe that's the context I heard that in.
They put her on lock for the second season.
But you see what happened, right?
Season one? Yeah, they brought in Pulaski, they got better.
Yeah, because no one could stand Pulaski.
Yeah,
true. Right, I thought so. But now, and Deanna Troi, you want to know the reason why she got command status? Because the writers got tired of trying to find plots to include her character, which was totally unnecessary. So they're like, well, we really didn't really think this through when we decided to have a ship's counselor, because scenes where people are going to get counseling aren't very exciting. So let's put her on a command track.
You know, I could see that. I could see that. But the only time that Crusher had some quote-unquote command chance to hold it down, I take that back here too. One, on the two-part episode called Descent, when everyone was on the planet with the Borgs,
right,
she was in charge of the ship, and she didn't get us killed. So that was good. But another one, where there's a Ferengi doctor committing or doing these warp testing, she got involved and had to physically whip this one guy's butt.
That's right, the guy in the shuttle, the guy in the shuttlecraft, right?
Yeah, she handled home skillets. So I'll give her that.
Now, just because, just because we only saw the back of her head when she was handling the business, don't you say anything bad about the fact that she needed a stunt double.
I'm not even going to get into that. She handled that. But I will say this. I've met Marina Sirtis.
Oh, really?
At a couple of conventions, and baby has got a rump. So she gets my vote right there.
Well, all right. So.
Only cute, man. Only
let me gather up my notes again and take over this show. This is my bridge, damn it. All right. So let me ask Craig, just give me your general, you may have already answered this question. If you feel like you've already answered it, we can move on. But give me your general impressions of the cast. You don't have to go into a lot of detail, but just give me your general impressions of the cast and the show.
I think when it first started off, as I said, I didn't watch them sequentially, but the younger versions of themselves were probably more irritating or I didn't find them as interesting as later on, especially when, say, Jonathan Frakes grew his beard. You know, they were much more mature and into their roles and so on, and they were much more likable. Coming from the original series and seeing that they had replaced a Vulcan with an android, that didn't excite me. Mm-hmm. I didn't think that they should have done. They should have put another Vulcan there. But I got to like Data after time. So I didn't really hate any of the characters. I really didn't. I liked them all. I just also didn't enjoy Jean-Luc Picard's whole persona compared to Shatner. You know, Shatner. You know, Shatner was a captain's captain, and Jean-Luc Picard was holier than thou kind of attitude. You know what I mean? He just had that whole thing about him. That was my take on it.
Man. Okay. Mark, the floor is yours.
Well,
are you going to talk some sense into Craig now?
I'm going to try to talk sense into both of you. Okay, when I first heard about the show, I was in college. I remember hearing a quote from William Shatner saying how he would never watch it, how he was offended and blah, blah, blah. I didn't really pay attention until Skin of Evil, when the TV guide said someone was going to die. I'm like, let me watch this show. And I watched it, and the first two seasons are trying too much to capture the original series appearance and look, and it didn't work. Third season, it all changed. It got a lot better. They really expanded things. They had several two-part episodes throughout the run. One thing that I didn't like, and I don't like in either Next Generation original series, is near the end of both of their runs, if you look at the bridge got real top-heavy with too many people with command status. I mean, everybody in the Next Generation, all the main characters have command status except, I take it back, all of them do. Everyone is at least a lieutenant commander now, and that's just too...
Did Crusher have command status prior
Wesley?
No, Dr. Crusher.
Yes, she had.
Did she?
She had it from day one. She had three pips on from day one.
Okay.
Worf got promoted from ensign to lieutenant commander in a DS9. So they're all, command status. Geordi, when he went from the bridge to the chief engineer, he got lieutenant command status.
Well, I mean, this is your opinion, but I mean, there are characters who were on the bridge, so it seems to stand to reason that they might have command status.
Worf didn't, and LaForge didn't for the longest time.
Well,
for seasons.
Well, that to me, that says how the show is being, is some of the characters are evolving. I wouldn't want them all to be commanders. I would want some of them to be ensigns.
Exactly. There need to be some ensigns. And again, look at Voyager. I'm not going to spoil Voyager. Never mind. But that's just a little pet peeve of mine. And when you have so many people rising up to command status, they're all looking at Riker like, why are you here, man? Okay, get your own ship and get a step.
Well, see, if you look at it, I mean, Riker is serving on the flagship of Starfleet.
Yeah. That's
so that was part of it, you know. But all right, so the theme of this show is, or the theme as I see it, was the Next Generation. Were they ready for their close-up? In other words, were they ready to go to the big screen? Before we go into that, I just want to give some context here, some facts that I came up with that I found on the internet. So, although the cast members were contracted for 8 seasons, Paramount ended The Next Generation after 7, presumably because they knew they were going to start ramp up the movies. But after doing 7 seasons, they decided to cancel it, to get rid of it, which was disappointing to the cast and puzzled some of the cast and was an unusual decision for a successful television show. Paramount then made the films using the cast, which it believed would be less successful if the show was still on television. Another reason was that season 8 would likely have reduced the show's profitability due to higher cast salaries and a lower price per episode when sold for stripping. What they mean by stripping is, and I only know this because I've worked for TV stations, is that I guess it's similar to like syndication. They sell the programs in blocks so that TV outlets can run the shows daily as opposed to weekly at the same time slot. Okay. So they run it like a strip. So the decision was also intended to encourage viewers to watch Star Trek Deep Space Nine, which I never could get into. I apologize.
You're so wrong, man. That show is so good.
I'm going to try. After I finish the Voyager run, I'm going to try. But they wanted to encourage viewers to watch Star Trek Deep Space Nine and the upcoming Star Trek Voyager, which had not yet made it to air. And both of those shows were cheaper, much cheaper to make than The Next Generation. The show's strong ratings continued to the end. The series finale was ranked number 2 among all shows that week between fellow hits Home Improvement and, I'll give you a guess at the other show, Big Sexy.
Cosby.
Don't don don't bum 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 bum.
Okay, Seinfeld.
Seinfeld. And also, speculation was that after 7 seasons, there were too many episodes in syndication. What I discovered was that some TV stations felt like they had enough shows to rotate, enough shows for their advertisers, so they didn't want to pay for, they didn't want to keep re-upping the license for new episodes, I suppose. I read in Rolling Stone that they made the case back in 2013 that TNG should come back to TV. I don't know if I agree with that. I think it's best to leave that where it was. I might not have a problem if Frakes decided he wanted to reprise his character as a captain. What do you guys think about that?
What I think they could have, where they dropped the ball, was when they had the episode where they intro Thomas Riker.
That's the clone I was talking about earlier.
You know, if they did something with that character, I'd be all for that.
Well, why that character as opposed to William Riker?
Because Thomas Riker doesn't have all the experiences that William has, and is more likely to make mistakes and learn from them, whereas William Riker probably learned, you know, too much to not make those type of mistakes and have the growing pains that Thomas would have.
I think it would be weird seeing a character named Thomas Riker when I see the actor playing him, and I'm thinking, no.
Well, yeah.
That's exactly. Will.
Yeah, for us as the audience, it would be too disconcerting, but it would be interesting.
So
I can be okay with a Captain Riker show, yeah.
Do you see him on the bridge of the Enterprise, or does he have another ship? He's currently, as of the end of Nemesis, he is captain of the Titan, I believe.
then we need to follow the Titan around because you don't want to horse around with the Enterprise because that means too many questions are going to be asked, like, where's so-and-so? Where's so-and-so?
Yeah, good point.
Give him his whole new team and maybe one guest star in the first episode from the Enterprise and then turn him loose.
Speaking of that, because the Next Generation, it had, from the original series, it had they had quite a few guest stars. They had Spock. They had Scotty.
Yep.
And there was one other I can't think McCoy. Of. McCoy. Was McCoy on one of them? Yeah, he was. He was on the pilot.
Yes, he was.
You're right.
See, they could do like they did on DS9. They took a minor character in Miles O'Brien and built him up. They could do the same thing with Riker. They could take Riker and take another minor type character and let him run on the Titan.
Well, you know, speaking of DS9, I didn't watch that show. I didn't find that show interesting until Worf signed on board. And that's when they had the Dominion War and you had the Defiant. And they finally got off the freaking space station and actually went into space.
No, I agree with that. They needed to get off that station. I do agree with that.
But what do you think about the poor actor who plays Worf? He's just done 7 years of wearing prosthetics and speaking with a deep voice, and then he goes and does another show where he spends many years on that as well.
I think he had a mortgage to pay, and he was fine with it.
Yeah, I think he has some bills to pay.
Because I don't think Michael Dorn done anything other than that. Maybe he's done a Lifetime movie or two. I don't know.
Well, way back in the day, he was on Chips.
Was he?
He was.
I didn't know that.
Probably didn't have the deep voice, though, right?
Yeah, he did. That's how I recognized him on Next Generation. I'm like, I know that voice.
I remember,
I
remember when the Generation started, his voice wasn't as deep, but as it progressed, it just got deeper and deeper and deeper. So obviously doing it every week, it just made it better.
So the last episode of The Next Generation was entitled All Good Things. Craig, did you see it?
No, I didn't.
Big Sexy, did you see it?
Of course.
Okay. So,
Craig, you're killing me, man. You are killing me.
Like I said, I wasn't into the TNG, but I've watched episodes. I'm going to go back and binge watch it now so that I can catch up.
Well, I'm going to warn you up front that those first two seasons, you got to sit through them. It'll be hard.
Yeah, it will be.
it'll be the equivalent of watching the Star Wars prequels.
Oh, dear.
Wait a minute. Let's not get, you know.
Well, no. Okay, listen. There are a couple of really good standout episodes. Q Who, that introduces the Borg. Mm-hmm. Although I just recently watched that a couple weeks ago. It is very dated. But there's Q Who, Measure of a Man, where Picard has to defend Data in a trial for, I forget why he was on trial.
They wanted to make him property.
Right.
They wanted to dissect him and build, you know, that's other ones. Right. And Data's like, no.
There was another episode called, I think it was called Where No One Has Gone Before, where Nagilum, just some sort of space entity, starts killing all of the, starts experimenting with the Star Trek, with the Enterprise crew. And that was it's a very slow episode, but it was very dramatic. And there are a handful in those first two seasons, but it's rough. But you got to sit through it. You got to be true to the game.
I had a random thought because preparing for the show, I watched Generations again, and I'm sorry. I watched Generations. Well, it actually, you know what? It's not such a bad movie, but I watched it because I was always upset that they killed off Captain Kirk.
Well, we're going to save
that.
Yeah,
I'm not going to get into it. But what I was going to say is that if any TV show had to come back about Star Trek, it would be good to bring back the Enterprise B. You know, you could imagine a show where they got lost or something similar to Voyager, and it's the same crew. We can have Cameron from Ferris Bueller as the captain again.
Oh, yeah, dude!
And you know they've been lost out there in the old and gray, and they're trying to find their way back. And of course, on that bridge, there were Tuvok was on that bridge as well.
That's true.
You remember? Yeah, you know, but
he's not Tuvok. He's not Tuvok on that bridge.
He's not, but he looks the same, right?
He's the same actor. Yeah,
he's the same actor. They never explained it, so maybe they could come up with a good way to explain it if they bring the show back. So that was just my random thought after watching that movie.
I got to say, Captain Harriman, That's the actor. I forget his name. He was in Speed. That's the only other thing I remember. And
Ferris Bueller. Come on. Yeah.
And Ferris Bueller.
He was Cameron. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, come on, Q.
I knew that, but I mean, that's obvious that he was the first Bueller. Everyone, I'm just, you know, you may have missed him in Speed, so anyway. But there's no way that Starfleet would put that guy on the bridge of the Enterprise. Ah, that was so poorly handled. But okay, let's get back to All Good Things. That was the last episode before they transitioned to film. And I thought it was let me back up. When I first saw it, I did not like it. That's a trend with me, it seems like, to be with Star Trek.
I don't like anything, man.
I didn't like it when I first saw it. First of all, I found it very confusing. I couldn't make heads or tails of it. But subsequent viewings, I mean, I love that episode now. At the end, hey, my brother got some tears. His eyes well up at the end of that. They're sitting there playing poker, and I love the way the camera rotates over the poker table, and then it rotates on the whole of the saucer section. Just a really an epic send-off for the episode. And this is at this point, Worf has already started a relationship with Troy, which I probably shouldn't say. He gets his jungle fever on quite a bit throughout the Star Trek run.
Oh, here you go. You can't.
Nothing wrong with that. They shut down Next Generation, and they move on to the films. Let's just go through the films very quickly. So we have Star Trek Generations, which features both both crews from the original series and Next Generation. It made $118 million worldwide off of a $35 million budget. After that, you had First Contact, which was directed by Jonathan Frakes, and it is to date, I believe, the most profitable of the movies. It made $146 million. I could not find the budget. Insurrection. Basically, a TV episode that was drawn out to 2 hours. It made $112.5 million off of a $58 million budget. And then we come to Nemesis. That movie made $67.3 million off of a $60 million budget. So, needless to say, it took us... Now, Nemesis came out in 2002, I believe. I could be wrong about that. No, it did. It came out in 2002 because it came out. Some of the speculation I saw on the web was that one of the reasons that it did so poorly was because it came out against Lord of the Rings, The Two Towers in 2002. If that's what they need to say to help them sleep at night, fine. But I'm going to read some things, and I don't want to get into Nemesis per se because we might do another episode about what went wrong there. But I'm going to read some quotes that I picked up off the internet. So, off of Wikipedia, in regards to Nemesis, actors LeVar Burton, who played Geordi LaForge, and Marina Sirtis, who played Troy, have spoken unflatteringly of director Stuart Baird, criticizing him for not watching any of the episodes of The Next Generation. Now, we just spoke about that, didn't we, Big Sexy? Talked about Robert Wise not knowing anything about Star Trek and directing that first film. So here we have it again. And Sirtis, I got to give her some, she's got a pair of balls on her, man. Let me just read this. Sirtis has bluntly called Stuart Baird an idiot.
Wow.
She went on record with that. Jonathan Frakes, while praising both the character of Shinzon and actor Tom Hardy, yes, Tom Hardy, a young Tom Hardy played the villain in this film. Jonathan Frakes said that if he himself had directed, as he had done with the previous two Trek films, he would have made the film less villain-centric and given more screen time to the regular Next Generation cast. I can't agree with him more. Stuart Baird, Helmer, or director, of films such as Executive Decision, which is an excellent movie. I highly recommend you see Executive Decision. It stars Kurt Russell, Steven Seagal, and Halle Berry. So he directed that. He also directed U.S. Marshals, which was the not so popular sequel to what was the film with Harrison Ford? The Fugitive. He was primarily a film editor, but he got the directing post for this film. He had no knowledge of Star Trek before becoming director of Nemesis. He even refused to watch any of the Next Generation TV series to prepare, and reportedly went so far as to say as he hated the franchise and had to be forced to watch the preceding films, allegedly. So it's no wonder so many fans feel the characters in Nemesis act strangely. Now, just another tidbit. During production of Nemesis, a script developed by John Logan, whose name I know he's written a lot of stuff, I just couldn't put my finger on anything at the moment. But a script developed by John Logan and Brent Spiner was in the works for a fifth and final film featuring the TNG cast that would have wrapped up the adventures of the Enterprise E crew with tie-ins to historical aspects of the Star Trek franchise. However, the poor performance of Nemesis at the box office convinced Paramount that the franchise was suffering from franchise fatigue and the script was abandoned. Now, I wanted to do this topic because I personally, despite the fact that I love Star Trek The Next Generation, and it ran 7 seasons, I love some of the storylines, the plots of this series. I think trying to get these characters on the big screen, putting them on the big screen, was a horrible mistake. Now, I'm going to go into detail, but before I do so, Big Sexy, yep. I want to know, of those 4 films, which ones did you see?
I saw them all.
You saw them all. Okay. So, what did you think of the TNG cast on the big screen in general? Now, you can reference, if you want to reference Generations, because it was the first film after transitioning from the TV show. If you want to reference that, or you want to kind of stay on that, or however you want to take it, I just want to get your opinion on how you feel like that cast transitioned to the big screen.
Well, Generations, to me, gets a pass because it is the first one, and it bridges the original series with Next Generation, and the first face you see is Whoopi Goldberg, a legitimate film star. So I'm going to let that one slide. But last night, in preparing for this, I watched First Contact, and I see where they made tons of mistakes. I'm going to focus on First Contact, because that's what I saw last night. First of all, they had Jonathan Frakes directed. Now, I don't know his directing resume. He may have directed some episodes, but directing for film and directing for TV, 2 different animals. He made the classic mistakes of trying to be too jokey with the characters, first of all. The bridge was lit terribly. He didn't really direct Worf. He gave Worf a sense of humor and made him a little too emotional. Speaking of emotional, Data, they let Data run wild. No, this was wrong. Now, there are series that have taken, the leap to the big screen, Sex and the City and Entourage. Granted, both of those are HBO series, and so they didn't really have far to go. But this could have been done better. I generally don't like a new director with no history, but I think Frakes was too close and tried to do too much, and it could have been better. And that was just the theme of all 4 movies. They just didn't do enough. Now, Picard is excellent, but the rest of the cats in the cast aren't big screen actors, and they were directed as TV actors, not as film actors.
That's interesting. Big Sexy, I have to commend you. I have to commend you for making that. I don't know that I agree with it necessarily, but I think you may have a point. And I work in TV and corporate video. I didn't come to that conclusion that he directed them as a TV director would direct actors. But that's very interesting. Can you expand on that? I'm curious to see how you arrived at that.
It's like I've been on the set for a lot of independent films and things like that. And it's like when you take someone with a finite budget and they have the little stories all told, then you give them 10 times the money. Does it make 10 times the product better? No. You know, they just tried to do too much to say, look at me, we're on the big screen now, we're going to compete with Star Wars on their playing field, and it doesn't work that way. I mean, I'm not saying it couldn't have happened, but one thing that really struck me was the lack of Easter eggs in First Contact. They had opportunities to do all kinds of things. Granted, they did have one by having the EMH on there from Voyager, and they did have the actor who played Neelix play the character, but they could have done so much more. When they had Worf come on with the Defiant, the only person on the Defiant from DS9 was Worf. No. They could have got a couple of cameos, wrote a couple of checks, and had Odo or Kira or other people on there just to get them in and get them out, to tie it all together. They didn't do that. And they just completely got the Borg wrong. You know, they were thinking more
how,
about...
How did they get the Borg wrong? Why do you say that?
Well, the Borg, when they first came out, were like army ants. They weren't stopping. They weren't doing nothing. This is what we're going to do. Get out of the way. Now, this time, when they had the Borg Queen, then they have people, they have Borg members actually, like, threatening, holding people in threatening positions. Borg don't threaten. Borg take you. That's it. If they want you, they take you. They're not going to hold you and say, do it my way or else. No. They're going to come in, handle business, and keep it moving. And they didn't do that. And I'm glad you said that. And the Borg in the films are too zombified looking, and they're trying to be too perfect as opposed to the TV versions. TV Borg were just fine, but they try to take it too far.
All right, and I don't want to. I just wanted to hear your opinion on the Borg here. I don't want to get too deep into the mechanics of the film itself, but I think you raised some good points about the cast. Did you have anything else in that respect?
You know, again, no. I mean, as much as I ripped him earlier, a good Easter egg would have Wesley Crusher come back just for a second. You know, you gotta don't treat your cast as TV people, you know, dabbling in feature films. Treat it as a feature film and give everyone a chance to shine, and they didn't do that.
Am I correct that Will Wheaton didn't want to have anything to do with Star Trek after the show wrapped?
I had heard that, but I'm not certain, because if you look at his work on Big Bang, he's steadily pimping Star Trek. So, you know, it may be possible, but maybe he grew out of that. I don't know.
Hey, man, like I said, when you realize, it might be the, who was the woman who played Diane on Cheers? Shelley Long?
Shelley Long.
It might be Shelley Long syndrome, where I don't need this, and then you got that mortgage and that car note. Well, Big Sexy, that was a very incisive, trenchant analysis. Now, Craig, I know you don't know Next Generation as well, and I want to steer you clear of any criticisms in regards to the Kirk situation in Generations, but because we're going to do a show about that. But so, from what you do know, how do you assess the portrayal of the Next Generation cast from TV to screen? Do you think it was a smooth transition?
So I'll just premise this by saying that I did actually watch a lot of TNG episodes, so I was very familiar with the way that the characters were portrayed and how the actors portrayed those characters. To prepare, I watched Generations, like I said, and I thought it was fine. In my memory, it seemed like the characters were the same. They were playing themselves. They weren't any different. And just to double check, I went back and watched an episode of Next Generation, just chose a random one, and I watched it, but in season 7, so it would be closer to the movie. And again, it just confirmed for me that it seemed like they were playing themselves the same way in the TV show they were in the movie. They weren't being directed any differently, as far as I could tell. And it seemed like a good transition to me.
Okay. So, all right. Here's my take. Just sit back, okay? I just think that, and part of the reason I wanted to do this show was that I think, for me, it was such a blatant money grab to take this series off the air and put it on the big screen. And Craig, I'm glad that you went after Big Sexy, because what you just said, with all due respect, I think the polar opposite. I think one of the biggest problems with the cast transitioning from the TV show to the screen is that they were, for the most part, nothing like the characters that I had come to know and love on the TV show. What do I mean by that? So you have Next Generation, the TV show, which it did what it did for Trek, and I didn't appreciate this at first, but I grew to appreciate it, was that it did great drama, and it presented a cast that was very cerebral. I know, and Picard, it presented a captain for the late 80s and the 90s. Now, you had Kirk in the 60s. He did his thing, no doubt. But they established this show from, like, season 3 forward. Even in, like I said, even in seasons 1 and 2, they had some very thoughtful episodes. They established that what made this Star Trek viable, what made it popular. I mean, the show ran for 7 seasons, and the ratings hardly ever dipped. Was, I think, that they managed to blend spatterings of action, but they, for the most part, they played to their strengths, and that was, you had this superior thespian as the captain, Patrick Stewart, and he was able to take on so many different elements. The show was able to take on so many different elements because he brought validity to it. You got Star Trek talking about, metaphorically, things like LGBTQ issues. I'm thinking about episode called The Host. You had The Outcast. You had episodes that dealt with, you had an episode called Ethics, which dealt with assisted suicide, which was, I believe that was the same time frame that Kevorkian was making news. You had episodes about race relations, and that was basically any episode where you saw a Cardassian and a Bajoran on the same screen. You had episodes that dealt with pro-choice or versus pro-life, and I'm thinking of the episode The Child, where Deanna Troi was impregnated by some alien presence. So what I grew to like about the show was that, wow, they are really tackling a lot of dramatic, heavyweight social issues, but they're putting a science fiction spin on it, and I love this. But what do we get when we move to the films? These characters, what they were on the show, were completely thrown away, jettisoned for the purpose of making them action characters, which these characters are not. Captain Picard, now there was one episode in The Next Generation, it was called Starship Mine, where the ship is undergoing some sort of baryon cleansing, and everyone had to vacate the ship because it would vaporize you, or it would kill organic material, or something like that. But there are these criminals who try to hijack the Enterprise, and Picard is stuck on the ship.
One of them was Tuvok.
Say again?
One of those was the actor who played Tuvok.
Really?
Oh, yes.
But he wasn't playing, obviously he wasn't playing Tuvok. It was
It was Tim Russ.
And, you know, to your point, I think a lot of Star Trek, they reuse actors.
Yes.
Because they know the routine, and for whatever reason, they gel very well. So, like, one of my favorite episodes, I think my favorite TNG episode is The Defector. And the actor who plays Admiral Jarak, he comes back and he plays a character on Voyager. It's clear it's the same guy. But anyway, so you had that episode, Starship Mine, where you kind of got the sense that Patrick Stewart was like, you know what? I've been working out, guys. I know I'm in my 50s, but I've been working out. I just saw Die Hard. And I want to do an episode where I get to kick some ass. And it was fine, you know. It works well.
Kicked at the end, though.
What's that?
the captain of the renegade ship, the woman, took him out.
I don't remember the episode that well. Once I finish Voyager, I'm going to go back and start watching all of my favorite episodes of Next Generation. So, and that's going to be one of them. But okay, so he got taken out at the end. But I do recall he was kind of handling business for the majority of that episode. He was strategic, cunning, and he held his own in hand-to-hand combat for the most part. But then you get a degenerate. So you did have that, but that was a vanity episode for Patrick Stewart, and he got to have fun. That's great. But when they transitioned to the films, they tried to make Picard like a Kirk-like figure, and that's not who he is. So what you have is on all four films, you have this structure where you have Picard who is trying to be that Kirk-like action hero who saves the day. That happens with Generations, although he enlists William Shatner's help, Kirk's help. You have that in First Contact, where he decides he's going to be the one to save Lily and Data from the Borg Queen. Insurrection, I seem to recall he is alone fighting, I forget the character's name, it was played by F. Murray Abraham. He's the main guy, the bad guy with the stretched face in Insurrection. And then in Nemesis, you have Picard being the action hero taking on Shenzhen. And then you have Data and Riker. They're off doing their own thing. Riker has to fight. Riker in Generations, he has to land the ship, crash lands the saucer section. But the whole dynamic that you saw with Kirk, Bones, and Spock, where you knew those three guys, you could put them in an action vehicle, and it's going to work because we know Kirk, Spock, and Bones as men of action. Even though Spock was the logical one, and he had Captain Kirk's back. So did Bones. So did Sulu. He doesn't like to be called Tiny, and he let that guy know because he was down with his captain. But with these four films, it just, the dynamic does not work. Picard is not an action hero. He's a Renaissance man. He tends to think through things, but they tried to have him using his fists. Now, if you look at Generations again, I mean, Craig, did any of those fight scenes with Picard and Kirk work for you?
Maybe. There weren't too many of them. It only happened right at the end of the movie. Shatner, of course, looked better at it because you expect him to be that kind of person. That's his character. I thought Picard was okay doing it.
Well, okay. I'm thinking, you guys have a big screen version of Star Trek, and you've got Kirk and Picard on screen together. Now, if you're in the beginning of that movie, I mean, the beginning of that movie is golden. You got Kirk, you got Chekhov, and you got Scotty on the bridge of the Enterprise. All that was magic. Maybe it's just Shatner and Koenig and I forget Scotty's his real name.
James Doohan,
right. Maybe it's just those personas, man, and those characters. They're just larger than life. I don't know. But I remember going to the movie, and I was thinking, wow, this is really working. I can't wait to see what they're going to do with Picard and his crew. And then we dissolve, and we get this kind of ridiculous kind of holodeck thing where they're on this ship in the middle of the ocean, and what's going on? What's happening here?
Yeah, I didn't like that either. That ship scene was just out of place.
It was so bad.
Really stupid, and the whole slow-mo with Worf falling in the water, and I'm like, okay. And then the next scene, we get Deanna doing her thing. Captain, what's wrong? And Captain's crying, and okay, his family was killed. And they set up a nice theme, you know, the issue of time and, you know, regretting, not regretting, but having sacrificed a family and losing what little family you have. And that's the whole theme of the film. Time, rewinding time, going back into time to correct the things that you may have missed out on. But I'm just saying, the movie as a whole, just it's plodding, it's ponderous, and I think it's because these characters just don't work well. You on a big screen, you need to see action. Now, let me just, for those who listened to the first episode of when we talked about Star Trek the Motion Picture, that gets a pass because you had Kirk, you had Bones, you had Spock, you had Uhura, and that was the first time we were seeing these characters in a long time. So maybe I'm being prejudicial, but that gets a pass. And that's another thing. I said earlier, this seems like such a money grab because, and I think part of that is because despite the fact that with the Star Trek the Motion Picture, see, we hadn't seen those characters in such a long time. You could have had Kirk tapping his foot on the bridge, and I would have been like, okay, cool. Yeah, that works. Here, it just seemed like right away from All Good Things, maybe the fact that there wasn't any time separating the last episode to the first movie, it just seemed, it had a rushed feeling to it. It just seemed like they had not researched the characters. They didn't do a good job of looking at what made the show so popular. And I think it was the drama of the show intermixed with the sci-fi. And with the movies, they just gave us the action. And that's not what these characters were about. Now, if you look at Star Trek III, for example, to me, Star Trek III, that's the one, Search for Spock, where, you know, they bring Spock back to the cast. That movie, almost to me, is better than Star Trek II, and I'll tell you why. Because that movie had a lot of drama in it. The kind of stuff that this cast here would have fared very well performing. Because there was not as much action in Star Trek III. It was more about the loss of a child. Again, Kirk, what is Kirk willing to do for his friend? How far will he go? What is the extent of the consequences of a sacrifice for a friend? These are all very dramatic structures, very dramatic themes. I think the Next Generation cast would have killed that script. But that wasn't what happened with these films. And I'm rambling on and on. You guys, please jump in. These movies just really betrayed the Next Generation cast. You guys have any thoughts on that? Anything?
I agree completely. You know, it could have been so much better, and, you know, opportunities were missed. And that kind of tainted it. Now, we're going to disagree, but I think the next logical iteration would have been a DS9 movie somehow, but can't do it.
You're saying they should have done a DS9 movie after the show went off the air?
They should have done a DS9 Next Generation joint film, yes.
Well, that's interesting.
And the sci-fi cast ate it up.
I don't, how, other than Worf, how do you connect those two franchises?
Dude, Picard and Sisko have got beef.
Okay.
You know, Sisko holds Picard responsible back when he was Locutus for the death of his incredibly beautiful wife.
Well, you know what? I'm going to have to plead ignorance here. Because, as I said, I did not watch DS9, so I was unaware of that.
You're killing me. Ensign. Oh, geez. Chief O'Brien came from the Enterprise to go to DS9.
Well, I stand educated. I'm all for it then. if you're saying, I mean, and honestly, I'm going to look through the Star Trek Wikipedia and try to find that episode where... Then it did, but Picard never appeared on DS9, right?
He appeared on the pilot.
Picard did?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Because when Commander Sisko was given the station, the Enterprise was there to drop off O'Brien, and Commander Sisko gave Picard much attitude. To the point of, like, dude, you know I outrank you. You need to fall back a little bit.
Picard said this. I don't... No, I saw that.
That's what Picard should have said. That's how it appeared to me. You know, if I'm a captain... Now, granted, you know, something I did unwittingly hurt this man, but dude, that wasn't me, and you need to respect the pips, dude. Okay, seriously. But I didn't direct it.
Listen, I saw it was called The Emissary, right?
Yeah.
I remember watching that when it first came out. I don't remember Picard being on that at all. Okay, listen. As soon as we wrap this up, I'm going to go watch that episode. But, yeah, I was just found the films very disappointing. And to your point, you, except for one thing about First Contact, I think you nailed everything. Except I thought Worf was very well presented on that movie. I thought I don't think he was too humorous. Now, when you say he was jokey, are you talking about his fear of the whole walk, the spacewalk?
Exactly. And first of all, Worf does not have fear. And then on the spacewalk, when he's standing on the deflector dish and the thing is floating off into the space, he fires at it and says, "Assimilate this." No. Yeah. Worf would never do that. Ever.
I see where you're coming from, but I can let that go. But I thought one of the better scenes of that film was the confrontation that Worf has with Picard, where Picard's kind of in his Captain Ahab mode, and Worf is ready to like lay him out.
And the thing is, that whole Captain Ahab moment should have never happened. You got Alfre Woodard, who ain't even a member of the crew.
I agree.
Blow up the damn ship.
I agree.
I hated that.
And she gave him the sister gesture. She was like, psh, and put the hand up to the face. that was a little, that put me off a little bit, because you want to think that the captain always makes the right decisions. And if the captain doesn't, it's clear to the crew that they feel they can challenge the captain. It's happened many times on Voyager, but Janeway has realized that maybe she needed to fall back, even though she's the captain. But yeah, when Beverly Crusher says, "Okay, everyone, we're going to go hand-to-hand combat with the Borg. Get to your position." And Lily's like, "Blow up the damn ship." When the captain makes his decision, there's no more conversation. And that's when
that's it. It's over.
Yeah, but that did not work well for me at all, because, you shouldn't have an outsider, and this is in the writing, you shouldn't have an outsider convincing Captain Picard the right thing to do. That should be his crew doing that.
For once, Q, we're on the same page here, man, because I hated that. I hated everything about it.
No, why we got to be for once? And the thing where you are right on deck, Data, that is a perfect example of completely ruining a character. What the hell was that? He was annoying. He was, I'm like, "Look, dude, just shut the ship off." I mean, that was I'm thinking Generations.
Generations. But he was irritating, but I think they were exploring the idea that emotions can interfere with logic and your ability to just continue. So it was an interesting idea, but yes, they should have turned it off maybe after about 15 minutes or something.
But what was the point of putting it in him? I don't want to see an emotional Data. I want to see a Data who's struggling with that.
Yeah, so that's why they did that silly ship scene in the beginning, because he made an error. He pushed, I forget who it was, he pushed somebody in the water because he thought that was humorous. He was trying to figure it out.
Oh, yeah, and he pushed Beverly into the water.
Yeah, because they took the plank away from Worf and he fell and everybody was laughing. And he was like, "I don't understand this. What's so funny?" So he puts the chip in, but they should have taken it out. And what they did was they fused it. Of course, the storyline was it fused into him, and so they couldn't take it out. Which has just made him annoying for the rest of the time.
But the thing is that the way they played it, it shouldn't have been a subplot. It should have, because it had no relationship to the main story. That should have, you could have done a movie based on that, and you could have had a movie where Data gets his emotions, doesn't know how to handle them. Maybe he becomes, I don't want to say a villain. A good screenwriter could have found a way to make that the main plot, not just a subplot, because that was the thing about the whole series. That's something that made Data who he was and who we fell in love with. And here, it's relegated to a comical subplot.
Right.
Which I thought was totally ridiculous. The other thing about First Contact, and again, you know, I'm guilty of tearing this movie apart when this is really more general in terms of the films. The Borg Queen. Oh, some of the most tedious, boring, I just don't care episodes. Why can't the Borg just be... Why can't they just be, like you were saying, Big Sexy, and I told you not to talk about this because it wasn't really the theme of the show, but the Borg, why can't they just be a force of nature? Why do you have to have this sexualized female character who makes no sense in the Borg universe? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Like any organism, even if it's a computer organism or robots, it has to be some kind of master control. So they didn't have to make it that character, but I believe that they had to have a master control. If you think back to Tron, the master control program,
right?
There has to be somebody who was in the beginning and created all of this. And the command structure leads back to them. I don't believe that they could have explained the Borg as just something that grew organically like that.
Well, I agree. I can see why, you know, for the series, they needed to have a foil. They couldn't just have drones walking about, although they've managed to do it pretty well on Next Generation without having a centralized character for the crew to fight against. But I just, when I saw that, I remember to this day seeing that and thinking, this is just another trope. Why couldn't it just be a Borg? It could have been female or male, but the whole kind of spacey sexual aspect of it.
Yeah.
That such a cliche, and then she blows on his skin and was it good for you? I mean to me it was borderline offensive. It's like whenever you have this cadre of machine people who are relentless, and yet they have a female leader who kind of semi relies on her sexuality to lead them. And to me, that was just a huge mistake. And all those scenes, I mean, do you agree? All those scenes were just ponderous to me. There was nothing to them. Why did she have, the only reason she had Data capture was so that she could get the command codes to disable the Enterprise. And yet it was all drawn out. I'm going to give you flesh and real skin so you can give me the codes. It made no sense.
But it's probably the director thinking, I better make this movie appeal to non-Star Trek fans. That's probably what it was.
And that's another thing. The Borg don't run. So in First Contact, when their ship was being blown up, the Borg, I guess, circle, takes off and runs to the past. Get out of here with that. The Borg do not run. They send other cubes and finish the job. That never should have happened either.
Well, you may be right. I put it this way. You may be tactically correct about the Borg. I do give the screenwriter some leeway because they have to craft a story where you have a conflict or there's something that creates a conflict. And we'd seen it. So we'd seen Borg cubes fighting the Federation so many times. I mean, Wolf was it 359, that battle?
359, yeah.
When the globe or whatever, the sphere goes into the past, and then it's pretty chilling when Data says, "I'm reading 360 million life signs on the planet Earth, all Borg." That was a pretty good moment, I think. But then it gets into the whole Zefram Cochrane thing, which was, I don't know what that was.
That was awful,
terrible. And Deanna Troi should not be getting drunk.
My wife for 4 tequilas now.
Well, I mean, I'm not talking about the mechanics of her getting drunk. I'm talking about she shouldn't be written to be getting drunk. So
no, she shouldn't. Then again, that was a concession. Again, we're on the big screen. Let's do something out of character. Boom.
I just remember when they announced that the Next Generation cast was going to the big screen. I was so excited. I was a little cautious because I was thinking, wow, some of my favorite episodes, I don't know how those are going to translate to the big screen. Because, again, as I've said repeatedly, they did have smatterings of action, but what I liked about this cast was Picard was that Renaissance guy who thought through every problem. He didn't rush gung-ho into a situation. He kind of could think. He was like the Batman of Star Trek, in that he was mostly five steps ahead of his opponent. And I really admired that character. Oh, this is a perfect example. This is one of the best episodes of the series. It won a Hugo Award, and that is The Inner Light. That's the episode where Picard, they come across this beacon, and it shoots out a ray, and it sends Picard to this planet where he lives for 40 years in the space of a half hour or something like that. You know the episode, Big Sexy?
You know what? I know I'm going to get a lot of pushback.
Dude,
on this.
That...
Not one of my favorites.
Oh, okay. Wow. Oh, well, but you know what? I can see that, because there's not much... To me, that is more of a dramatic staging. And it is so brilliant. It's a perfect example of how science fiction and drama can blend, and there's not that much action. And I was thinking...
It reminds me of an episode of MASH way back when, where Hawkeye wrecked his Jeep and was with a Korean family, and they didn't speak English. So it was pretty much a half-hour monologue of Hawkeye. And it didn't have the rest of the cast. And this was kind of like the same thing. You know, you have Picard and Galen's body. You know,
I think it was Kamen, wasn't it? Or was it Galen?
It was Galen.
Okay.
And they're doing all that stuff, watching him grow older and, you know, have the kids, and they grow older. I'm like, okay, this is fascinating, but let's get back on the ship. You know, I just wasn't my thing.
Well, okay, be that as it may, I can see that. It's an acquired taste, but just the acting by Picard, and you know, that was his actual son that played his son on that episode.
That I did not know.
Yes, that was his son. Just such a... Craig, I'm going to highly recommend that you check that out. It's not... You know what it's comparable to? And I want to see what you guys think about this. That episode was comparable to what is widely perceived as the best original series episode, City on the Edge of Forever. Because that episode did not have hardly any action in it either, as far as I remember. But it is a great episode. It's very much along those lines in terms of tone. So, Craig, you got to... If you have Netflix, look up The Inner Light on Next Generation. Okay. But, you know, like I was saying, there are some great TNG action episodes. I'm thinking of Best of Both Worlds, Descent, which was a two-parter with Lore teaming up with the Borg. Remember Me, an excellent Dr. Crusher episode.
Remember Me is a great episode.
That is a great episode. Power Play, The Next Phase, Yesterday's Enterprise, and Big Sexy, you mentioned this one, Genesis. We talked about that before. So TNG, they brought the action to the series, but for every action episode, there were dozens of brilliant dramas. And I'm looking at The Defector, which again is my favorite of all the Next Generation, The Inner Light, tons of other episodes that escape me right now. But Ethics, I mentioned it before, great episodes that really define who this cast was, and they just did not transfer that to the films. Maybe they couldn't have. I got to think, with a good screenwriter, you can do anything. But they just reduced them to chess piece action characters. And I think that's why that's why we saw a drought until J.J. Abrams got his hands on Star Trek, and we have what we have today. Which is why I'm watching Voyager, because I want real Star Trek.
I can't watch these J.J. Abrams films. I won't. The first one was enough. I'm like, that was it for me.
Well, believe me, I know wherever you speak. I think Craig is a little bit more forgiving, which is ironic, Craig, because you're a Kirk guy.
Actually, I'm not forgiving at all. I don't like what they've done with the Star Trek universe. I don't believe they needed to do all that to reboot the series that way. So I don't actually like the new series. If I watch the movies, they're great movies within themselves, great action movies, but what they've done to Star Trek is not cool.
And you're talking, you are talking about the J.J. Abrams iteration, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
I could have, because you and I went to see it, you, me, your wife, and my wife, we went to see it, didn't we? The first one.
It's possible. Long time ago now.
Yeah, we went to see it, and I thought you guys loved it. Mm. Not that there's anything wrong with that. That's my Seinfeld quote, which I know. Back on quite a bit.
And I'm sure I saw that episode recently.
Right. So listen, to all of our listeners out there, we really want to hear what you think. Am I completely off base? Did you love the Star Trek TNG movies? If you disagree or if you agree, please let us know. You can email us at redshirtspodcast. Again, redshirtspodcast@gmail.com. Please go over to iTunes. And you can find us by searching on Red Shirts. We're there in the podcast section. Leave us a review, download the show, subscribe. Please let us know what you think. We can only get better if you give us the feedback that we need to hear. So we really appreciate and value anything, any suggestions you might have or any feedback you might have. All right. So to the Bridge Crew, anything else? Any last words?
I hate the Crushers collectively.
Okay.
No, don't kill Kirk.
Oh, speaking of which, our next episode will be... Here's the title of our next episode. You Hollywood Bastards, You Killed My Kirk. We're going to get into the death of Captain James T. Kirk. So we're going to kind of traverse generations again. That's why I didn't want to get too deep into it, but we're going to bring that back up again and discuss why that had to happen and was it necessary. So with that, oh, I just got a transmission from the captain. He just told me that we need to dig 3 graves up on the horizon. He's going to explain why later. Red Shirts is not endorsed by Paramount Pictures, Viacom, or CBS. It is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. Star Trek, the Star Trek logo, and all names, pictures, and audio of Star Trek characters are registered trademarks and/or copyrights of their respective trademark and/or copyright holders.